Hey, thank you, Rocky. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, Monday through Thursday here, Tuesday through Thursday for now. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you some ideas, some concepts, some guests. Help you lead a more positively minded life. Tomorrow we may have a real surprise for you. It'll be a surprise. I'm not going to mention it. Something interesting. Be sure to tune in. We have been talking about men. We've been talking about men and the minds of men. We've been talking about men and their relationships to women, their relationships to sex, and we're trying to continue this because I think as Margot said, it is men who seem to be doing all the stuff out there that we seem to have the biggest objection to, you know? I mean, other than Margaret Thatcher, I can't think of a single person out there who I've had very strong negative responses to in the political arena. Usually it's going to be some guy is pushing some button somewhere. Somebody said to me the other day, hey, how's Bush going to get reelected? Right? And I've got the inside. He's going to go after Corsica. All right. A note. Mr. DeMille, I love your show. I continue to learn so much from you. But your last caller on Tuesday mentioned the 63 volumes of the teachings of the Elders of Zion. What she meant to cite was an infamous booklet written at the beginning of the 20th century in Russia called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which cites non-existing quotations of the 63 volumes of the Talmud. Now, the reason that this person writes a letter is to straighten this out with a different opinion. This book falsely accuses the Talmud of spreading concepts of immorality, pornography, etc., as your caller mentioned, although she believes it to be true. Of course, no edition of the Talmud, and I can read the original Aramaic, either in manuscript form or early printed version, mentioned any of these horrible charges. Henry Ford had this booklet widely disseminated throughout America in the 1930s, and the Arabs have been spreading it widely in America in recent years. I would really appreciate it if you would mention it on the show, since the other person had the space to say that the Talmud was trashy. So what do I know? Because the person yesterday asked me, did I read the original Talmud in the original language? And, you know, it's one of the things I missed. You know, I didn't. So I don't know anything, but I'm presenting two sides to you. Just in case we leave an impression somewhere that's unfair and unjust. And it's about justice. Another person writes me a letter. They were angry at me for presenting the male point of view as being natural. For me, saying that men who are led around by their schwanzes, or whatever you call it, because that's their biological imperative, is kind of a natural thing. And it may be natural, but we don't like it because it leads to things like priestly violations, you know what I mean? And it leads to urges and destructiveness and stuff. But just because I understand men, you know, just because I understand where men are coming from, you should pardon the expression, doesn't mean that I'm saying it's all okay, but it is okay in my book. Just as when we talk about women, and we talk about a lot of things related to women, it's all okay, you know. So I understand. She wrote me a letter, said, I've been married for 7 years to a guy who has been hateful, horrendous, won't even talk to me. And now you made him okay because you said it's all right for him to do what he does. He gets up, he goes out, he fools around with other women. My question was, you know, why are you married for 7 years to this kind of guy, you know, if you don't like it? But nobody's bad. See, here's the idea, my friends. This is called the positive mind. The real idea, I guess, is the peacemaking mind. The real idea here is that if you understand people, you will not hurt them. If you truly can find a way to understand the way somebody else functions, you're not going to be as harsh on them. You're not going to put them down. You're not going to be prejudiced. You're not going to make war. So my job as part of this Pacifica team is to teach you peace through understanding. Now, understanding doesn't mean you have to be inactive, but understanding. Understanding. So that you could look at a person who is screaming at you and not necessarily respond with screaming or terror. So that you could understand everybody's point of view. That's the idea here. not just one point of view, to understand, not just understand intellectually, but embrace. Say, I see. I see the way you are. This is everybody who comes to me for a consultation. I do one-time consultations. People come to me for a consultation, and that's virtually what I'm amazed at each time. I'm a psychodetective, you know. I look inside, I see what formed what, why it became the way it did. By the end of talking to someone for 20 minutes, I'm surprised, I'm amazed at how they survived. How does a child with their mind of 1 year old or 2 years old decide in a violent family or even a bad family, you know, family just with a lot of negativity, how do they decide how they're going to survive? What do they do if they've got an alcoholic parent, you know, and they've got a schizophrenic other parent, and they see all kinds of incest running around their house or some kind of abuse going around their house, and they look at this and they're confused. How do they get out of it? Well, they do things with their minds. They adapt. They could become quiet. They could become noisy. They could become dominant. They could hide. They could do any number of things. These are all called defense mechanisms, which makes sense. How are you going to defend yourself in the world? When I see it, and when I see somebody who, and the way they took care of themselves from childhood on, I'm amazed. I'm just in awe at the power of the person to be able to survive. So when I talk to you about men, or I talk to you about cultures, or I talk to you about people, or I talk to you about psychological disorders, I'm hoping you'll understand more and be less reactive, less judgmental, less angry. Let's talk about men. And welcome back, my friends, to this exciting exploration. Today I want to focus on one particular aspect of human relations that seems to affect all other relations. Today I'm going to look at how a person's relationship with their family of origin, either past or present, affects the quality of today's life. But I'm going to need your help on this one, because there's stuff I want to learn from you. You know about it much more than my theories and my books, more than some abstract concept about what things are like. I want you to help me with some research and your real-life experiences, which is what really counts. That's what I want you to call in. The specific area I want to research with you is about one type of relationship. Just one specific relationship, and that is the relationship between men and their mothers. Or should I say, mutters. And in case you could possibly imagine that this subject doesn't apply to you, let me remind you that you deal with this issue all the time. In men's attitude towards women, in men's pictures of themselves, in gay men's relationships with each other, in straight men's relationship with each other, in straight and gay men's relationship to women, in people in business. Your boss, what was his mother like? Think about this. What was his relationship with his mother? Definitely going to affect you. So whether you're a man who dares look deeply at his relationship with his mother, or a woman who has to deal with a man, for example, a male boss's attitudes towards his mother tell a lot about the way he is with women who work for him. If he's angry at his mother, that's going to kind of come out towards the women that work towards him. You're going to wonder, why is this guy so miserable? You know, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could hear what he feels towards mommy? Or maybe you're a mother who wants to understand her own relationship with her son, or a father who wants to understand that special bond between mother and son. You know, that little thing that goes on between them that makes you feel like they have a secret about you that they're not telling you? Whoever you are, you're dealing with this issue. By the time we're finished today, you'll get a taste of how important this issue is. If I had to choose one piece of information I thought was essential in understanding a candidate for public political office, it would be, what is his relationship to his mother? I know George Bush and his dad, right? George W. and Barbara. How come we never see them together? You know, how come we never see our president with his mother? We know he talks to his father. I mean, you know, they have an implant where they talk to each other moment by moment. We know that. But what does he feel towards his mom? What do you think? What's their relationship like? You think she calls him Georgie? Well, anyway, that's the one piece I'd like to see. If I could see that, of course, you never hear the truth because politicians dress up everything to get a vote. But if I know about family ties, I would understand the way this politician is going to feel towards his extended family, the family of humankind. You see, I would know how he's going to feel towards us, because love gets defined in those early years and in that early relationship. And I also want you to know that I believe all the combinations are important, like man's relationship with his father, as well as woman's relationship with her mother and her father, but today I want to focus on one, only one of these, the relationship of a man and his mother. And I'll be taking many of your calls on the issue because I want to hear and learn about your involvement in this relationship. Whether you're a man who wants to talk about his relationship with his mother, or especially if you're a person who's in a relationship with a man, where you think his relationship with his mother is somehow affecting his relationship with you. Women see it all the time. They look at their guys and they go, oh, I wish his mother would just kind of pass away, you know, get out of the scene. The infamous mother-in-law who's coming over and saying, how are you taking care of my boy? Are you doing good by him in one form or another? Let alone they grab your children, huh? I mean, think about it. Think about how this mother-in-law issue, mother-son issue, usually appears in later relationships. Let's look at a typical relationship. You enter a relationship with a man with both excitement and trepidation. You get excited with the hope that this is the relationship of a lifetime. Perhaps this time you found your soulmate. Your trepidations are based on your past experience. What's he like after you get past the passion of newness? Is he sincere? Is he real? Is he crazy? Will he respect you in the morning? There are, as you've learned from past experience, 100 things that can go wrong. You understand that the odds of it working are slim, but you're willing to take a shot. You're willing to give it a chance. Willing to negotiate differences, working at finding a way to develop true intimacy. Whereas in the past, you've been the kind of person who has buried all your feelings, hidden them, trying to make sure you didn't get anybody really mad, who lived on the inside world. You finally meet somebody who is willing to listen to you, who can stay with you for an hour and a half and tell you and respond to you with all his true feelings, and you tell him your true feelings. It's magic. It's wonderful. You hope that's the way it's going to turn out. You've been in analysis. You've gone to workshops. You've listened attentively to radio psychologists. You've learned that men are from Mars. You know that? You've done your homework, and you know that if it's really available, you're going to do your best this time around. Somewhere down the line, you know you may have to deal with his secrets of his past, which may come up in the form of past attachments, you know? He's got some financial problems. He's afraid of intimacy. He drinks too much. All the normal things that are part and parcel of a new relationship. And then there's your stuff, your basic distrust, your history of being lied to and deceived, your early childhood aches and pains. All those are part of the test of love. And you get closer and closer, starting to feel that mutual sense of commitment. He's willing, you're willing, and you've tested the water and you jump in, then it happens. At first, you felt like you had gotten to the top of the food chain. Now you are his mate, and people have to contend with you rather than contending with other relationships. He chooses you over friends, over other lovers, over his work. It's the way coupling works, you know, or is supposed to work. Then you notice that he has another priority, his mother. And you really can't say anything about it. You may feel very mixed feelings towards this other person, his mom, but you realize it's socially incorrect to let him know. Because these mixed feelings come up a lot. Mother may be possessive of her son, or mother may be idealized by her son. Somewhere you know that you, the mate, have always been compared to mother, and many mothers are going to see you as the enemy. What right have you got to have my little boopy? Right? Nobody makes spaghetti sauce like my mother. Or it's further down the line. How about when his mother tries to co-opt your children, taking this attitude that she, being the expert of child-rearing and telling you what to do? You know, new mothers, they try to learn. They got to learn how to bring up babies. They make mistakes. In pops this authority. I know what to do. Grandma comes in, she's taken over. Starts off simple with finding Mom to be a convenient babysitter, but then you realize that the roles are funny. You're the disciplinarian for your child, and your mate and his mother gang up on you all about the child. They gang up on you for being harsh on the kid because you wind up with only one role of a disciplinarian. And other than that, they're feeding the kid. Even mothers who are well-intended, straight of heart, somewhat get swept into these triads. Somehow, now get this, a man's fear of a truly intimate relationship will make him bring his mother into the relationship to keep his loyalty split. So when you run into a guy who's really afraid of getting close to anybody, he divides his mate with his mother. Now get that, he may not really care much about his mother, but once he gets into a committed relationship, he finally finds himself over-concerned about his mother. And the reason has nothing to do with the actual mother. It has to do with his fear of getting close. It's the same reason that men who have perfectly good, loving relationships sometimes have an affair. It's not because they're miserable at home, but it's because they're happy at home. Things are going too well. They're not used to it. They feel vulnerable, so they create a mess. They split their loyalties. It happens a lot in therapy, you know. We therapists call it splitting transference. A lot of you therapists know about it. You know, where a person will get into therapy, and then they're in therapy, and they're working in therapy, and they're getting better, and then they go see somebody else. You know, they split it. They just make sure nobody has power with them. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, by the way. We will be taking your call shortly. Not yet, though. I want to finish this with you because, see, most men are reluctant to relax, to trust another human, to settle into a loving relationship. So frequently they invoke the mother-mate loyalty conflict just to keep some distance. And this is not just men whose mothers are alive. Sometimes a dead mother can become a permanent residence in a house by having been deified by her son. We call it the my mother was a saint syndrome. How come we never hear my father was a saint? The reason is that the word saint conjures up images of self-sacrifice, and it is that all too apparent self-sacrifice that makes sons feel guilty and indebted to their mothers. Mothers are humans, not saints, and they rarely the two go together. So how does this relationship between man and his mother, how does it impact on others? We're also talking about the relationship between the mothers and their sons' chosen mate. And I'm going to start this examination by asking you to think about it. The first people I want to hear from are the people who have a man as a mate, and how you feel about the relationship he has with his mother. You're an important part of this discussion today. A little later we're going to be looking at that. What we call spousifying mother. You know? Not that mothers are bad, you know? It's not that they're any worse than anybody else, but, you know, people get sloppy. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to be taking your calls right now. It'll take us a second to queue up. We're talking about men and their mothers, and you could call me anybody who wants to relate to this issue. 212-209-2900. Rocky, if you got them lined up for me, I would love to take a call. We'll be thanking, by the way, Rocky, who's helping us engineer today, who is an expert at doing engineering, who takes little... He's just a marvel. Hey, Rocky, let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Well, I know there's somebody there. Rocky's...
Oh, Armand. Hi, how are you?
Hi there. Good. Who is this?
My name's Suzanne.
Hello, Suzanne.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm listening to you rap the last 20 minutes. I'm so lucky because I have such a wonderful husband and a great mother-in-law.
How lucky for you.
I don't have any complaints there.
Okay, so good. So what makes her a great mother-in-law? What does she do? Does she step out of the way? Does she give you all the room you need?
She gives me the room I need. She's very loving. She knows boundaries. I got lucky.
Yeah. Okay, and what's your relationship like with your own mother?
Not as loving. My mother and I, you know, my mother's not very open with her feelings. My mother-in-law is the total opposite of my mother.
So in a way...
She's a mother figure.
So in a way, you found the mother that you've been looking for. In a way, you know, you've got a...
In a sense, sure.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice. I mean, you got your husband, And you found a mother.
I sure did.
Hey, does your
husband... Very nice.
Does your husband ever get jealous about your relationship to your mother-in-law?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think he's happy that we have a good relationship.
Isn't that a nice thing? Just imagine a man who feels that his mother... He loses his mother to his mate. I never thought about it. You know?
Right.
So anyway, thank you for calling in. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. And I just want to say I enjoy your show very much. Thank you.
I'm glad. Thank you.
Okay, great. Bye.
Bye-bye. Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900 is our number here. We're going to take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Armand.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Kathy.
Hello, Kathy.
I wanted to just make an observation about my situation. I was married twice, and my first husband is very different from my second in many ways. But what I did notice as I got to know both of them is that both of their mothers were very, I would say, uncaring towards the child, you know, towards my husband, or not nurturing kind of mother. And I just thought it was kind of interesting that here I married two very different people, and yet it appears that their mothers were very similar, so I thought they were probably, maybe there was something about me that attracted, you know, them to me. Maybe I'm more of a nurturer or something that they were looking for.
Uh-huh.
In a woman.
Is that okay with you? How do you feel towards them?
That is okay with me. Well, let me see. Obviously, my first husband I'm divorced from. And that, I would say, perhaps was maybe too much. Maybe he was more like a child to me instead of a partner.
How's your second husband?
And my husband currently is much more of an equal relationship. In other words, I feel that I need from a man, you know, some support and caring, and I think he needs that from me. And I am happy to be nurturing and supportive in a lot of roles, but not like 100%, like a mother all the time.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Well, Kathy, I thank you very much. That's an interesting observation. So thank you for calling in. I'm going to comment on that. Okay. You know, it's kind of interesting. Kathy does mention something. She does mention about how you get to understand how your husband or man is relating to you and the mother part of you. Is every woman going to be maternal? Well, you know, here's the truth of it is. Everybody becomes maternal. The husband becomes maternal, the wife becomes maternal. Everybody, the idea of maternal means nurturing. How do you respond to nurturing? See, in many ways, I can become nurturing. I could become a mother to each of you because of my nurturing of you. And that's the idea of it. The idea of it is nurturance is associated with motherhood. That's what a mother does, right? She feeds you. She takes care of you. This is the idea, nurturing. The idea of a father is supposed to be nurturing, but it's a different kind of nurturing. So when somebody fathers you, supposedly it's more guiding and so on and so forth. I mean, it's real ambiguous, but it's interesting. So everybody becomes, how do you relate to nurturing somebody? There are some women out there who are dominant women, clearly strong women, and they attract boy chicks. They attract little boys all the time. They say, I have an equal relationship with my man, but they're always in control, and their relationships turn out to be relationships where the mate is always kind of feeling subservient or, you know, weak or needing or, you know, so on and so forth. So you become the mother to these boy-like men, or men who turn into boys after they get in the relationship with you. It's kind of disappointing because, you know, what happens in this case, and many of you are going to feel this, you had a relationship with a man, you hooked up with a guy who you really liked a lot, you felt turned on to him, you were hot for him, you wanted to have sex with him, you wanted to jump on his bones all the time, and then something goes wrong. something goes wrong. You say to yourself, I can't really, I don't know what it is, but I'm turned off. Well, what happens very often is a man goes from being the man-man to being the super-nurturing man, and he becomes like a mother. Many men do this. They begin to nurture you. They begin to take care of you. They begin to treat you not as a man would nurture, but as a woman would nurture, as a mother would nurture you. They even start nagging you a little bit and making you feel a little guilty because they're so good. And then something happens to you. You get sexually turned off, and you can't feel turned on to them in any way, and you don't know why. Hey, why doesn't it work anymore? Where's my man? I used to love to jump on his bones. I was so hot for him, I would never leave the bed. But suddenly you feel nothing. Well, what's happened very often is the husband has turned into a mother. And you have a lot of love for him, and you feel a lot of love, and you feel a lot of endearing love. And you say, oh, what a wonderful person he is. But he's become your mom, not your dad. And so what happens to you is you turn off as a woman. You just don't feel the magic. It happens more often than you can imagine. When I consult with people, I very often see this dynamic. Same thing happens to men. They get related to women. And these women come in as being the woman in the relationship, and there's this kind of feeling. And I don't want to be so piggy as to say there are clear-cut relationships, but eventually the woman starts taking on more and more masculine qualities, more dominant, more directive, more pushing the show, more telling him what to do. And instead of him feeling like he's a boy with his mother, he starts feeling like he's a boy with his father. Because she starts dominating in a way that his father did. And he wonders why sexually he can no longer feel excited by this person. Because on many levels, for many men, they turn their wives into fathers. This is a secret, my friend. People don't talk about this often. Think about your mate. Has your mate become your mother? Is your mate your father? Is your mate your mother? Which of the two? One would imagine if you're a heterosexual person, you would hope that your mate stays of the opposite sex, because that's where you'll feel your sexual charge. But when the sexual charge disappears, look for the fact that your mate has in some way symbolically changed sexes for you. That's an interesting observation. We're going to learn because we're learning about men. This is what happens to men. Men, we're poor guys. You know, we're run around by biology and demands and a lot of pressure. I don't say we should be pitied, but I think we should be understood. And I think if you understand, it doesn't mean tolerate, doesn't mean condone, but it means understand that there's a lot of internal conflict all the time. And the biggest internal conflict starts in a man's relationship with his mother. Real big item. When we get back from our break, we're going to talk about men's relationship to their mothers when dad is ineffective or unavailable. And this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Tuesday through Thursday here at WBAI. Listen to support it in New York City. And a fabulous station. And it is just coming up to 1:30. We're going to take a short break. I'll play you a little music. And then when I come back, here's a little something by someone called Jack Johnson. It's really remarkable. I think you'll like this.
A billion people died on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's side. Well, Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight. Who's the one to decide that it would be alright to put the music behind the news? Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. so baby, close your ears. On the news tonight, on the news tonight. The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. The mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullaby.
Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, Monday through Tuesday through Thursday here at WBAI. I can't get used to saying it. Tuesday through Thursday at WBAI, I guess maybe because I'm not supposed to get used to it. We're pressing to get that Monday back, my friends. And I want to be here every day for you. We are looking at men's relationships to their mothers. That's what we're doing. We're looking at how men are with their mothers, and we are... I want to tell you one thing about men with their mothers. There's this one syndrome that's very interesting. When dad is either abusive, unobtrusive, you know, mean, or ineffective, and there's mom with her son. Now, you know, a woman gets married to a man, and the man winds up being not so nice. And she's lonely and she's depressed and she says, what kind of mess did I get myself into? But it's the best I got and I don't want to be alone, so I'm going to hang out with him. He's going to be my husband. Then along comes a son. A son is there and she looks at the son and she says to the son, she says, oh, how nice to talk to you. She says, oh, it's so nice to have a boy to talk to. A male to talk to. And she starts talking to the boy about everything. And she gets all the tenderness and love that she misses from her husband from this boy. And she says to herself, well, maybe I shouldn't be so close to him. You know, maybe I should kind of leave him. But he is my boy, you know. And there's no other children around usually. There's just this one boy. And mom gets closer and closer with him. And in effect, she turns her spouse. She turns to her son for the needs that she should be getting from her husband, but she doesn't get. Now, of course, since she has a husband there, since she has the boy there, she doesn't have to really divorce the husband or challenge the husband, because how could the husband be resentful of the son? It's his son. So the son and the mother form a relationship, and then mom starts talking to the son about her dad, about his dad. You know, your father... He dubba dubba dubba. Well, you know your father. He dubba dubba. Nah, don't upset your father. And she isolates the boy from his father. This man is now separated from his father by his love for his mother and this relationship with his mother. Now, this is very interesting. Because what happens is he is looking for his dad, but he can't find dad. And mom has proprietary rights on him. So what does he do? He is spousified now. He's married to mom. He's got to hate his dad. He's got to see his dad as evil because mom said he's evil. You can't fight mom. Dad's not available in the first place. Dad doesn't want to have anything to do with you because you're mommy's boy. Right? Dad's sick with you. He tries to get close to you, but you're not allowed to get close to him because mom's mad at him. So now you are close to mom. And now you grow up and mom says one thing, don't be like your father. For many men, that means don't be male. And what happens is what we call a gender identity crisis. Now these men grow up and they want to be good boys. So they want to not be male. They want to be less than male or different than male. And so they have a problem identifying with maleness. Now, second to that, another reason mom doesn't want them to be male is because the mom doesn't want competition. So she doesn't want him going out with a girl. So she, in some way, discourages the male-female contact of boy with girl. And what do you think happens? In the gay community, this story is about 70% or 80% of the story of many people in the gay community. I don't mean to be putting anybody down, because I could tell you about why men are in crazy relationships. Heterosexual relationships have just as much pathology behind them. But very often when a man is very close to his mother and alienated from his father, he chooses homosexuality. Because number one, he's not allowed to be with women. Number two, he is looking for his dad. He's looking for dad. He's looking for daddy. You know? And he's staying faithful to mommy the whole way. He's going to be with mom. So this is one of the dynamics of this kind of relationship. 212-209-2900. I'm sure many of you have been through this. It's kind of hard because you're searching for dad your whole life. And, you know, it's coming out a different way. Whereas other guys who have mothers who seem somewhat distant, who keep some kind of respectful distance, mothers who say, you know, I may be close to him, but I think I'll keep my own distance, let him grow into his own, and I think I'll encourage him in every relationship he has with every woman and every girl. I'll teach him to find his own way. That's what parents really do. They don't restrict. I mean, we know enough about fathers with their daughters, right? You're going to be a virgin until you die, or until you get married when I find a man good enough for you. You know, fathers could be really hideous with daughters. But mothers take possession of their sons' souls very often. Now, what happens to you if you've got the kind of mother who's so desperate in need that she needs desperately something to hang on to, does not go to a therapist, doesn't go to a husband, loms on to the boy? The boy now feels this possession taking over. He feels somebody is taking over his mind. Somebody's taking over his body. He's like a toy. You know, he's like a doll. And he feels that somebody's moving his hands and dressing him and cleaning him and doing his underwear. I know a man now, an adult man, whose mother still washes his underwear. And when I asked him, why do you bring your underwear to your mother's house to get washed? He says, because nobody can get them clean like she does. Other than that, he has a great difficulty forming relationships that are long-lasting with women. Because they can't do his underwear as well. So what happens is you have this kind of possession syndrome in your mind. Now, you're a guy. Your mom is trying to take you over in some way. She's going way beyond the boundaries of what it should be. She's getting closer and closer to you. You're beginning to feel everything she feels. You feel guilty for her existence. You need to take care of her. It's like you don't even exist. You're a puppet. You close your mind. You begin taking your mind and isolating your mind. You form a little block around your mind like the time machine, and you remove your mind. And these people have this kind of dissociative being. These are the guys, when you try to get to them, you find there's only a certain amount you could go, and then you can't go any deeper. These are the ones who are the innies. You know, these are the innies. These are the closed off. These are the frightened ones. These are the ones you cannot get through, and if you do get through to them on a soul level, they very often become angry at you. They frequently become architects, you know? They become designers. They become in their own world so they could live in a little world where nobody could touch them. Then they'll have a trophy or two around, you know, a wife or a mate who's like kind of a trophy at a distance, but they don't really get close. They can't get close because they're trying to protect their minds from the possession of their mothers. That said, I now need to apologize to all the other mothers in the world, saying it is not you doing a bad thing. Most of you are great. Most of you are wonderful. Most of you are trying to do the very best you can. I am not trashing moms. You know, I don't trash any of them. I met a woman the other day who said to me, that she likes to play with her little boy, and she likes to get him in a tub, and she likes to snuggle up to his belly and tickle him in the belly with her lips. And she's bordering on sexual stuff with him. And she says, I don't tell anybody this, I don't know why I'm telling you, but I really love it. And I'm going, oy, not such a good idea. 212-209-2900. Rocky, if you would, I'd like to take another caller now. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. My name is Lynn. I'm calling from Queens.
Hi,
and I love your show.
Thank you.
Wonderful. I'm concerned about my sister and her son. He is 10 years old, and she has never been married. He's the result of her going to a sperm bank. And she really loves him, but what I'm worried about is that he still sleeps with her every night. And when they are in public, sometimes they almost smooch like lovers. And from what I understand, he sometimes wakes her up in the night to cuddle. And my mother and I are going crazy about this, but she won't listen to us because she thinks we get uptight about everything and we're just getting uptight about something that's perfectly normal. What do you think about this?
Well, you know, according to your description, it sounds pretty bad. It
yeah.
sounds pretty bad from the way you're describing it, right? I don't know what the
right.
real situation is. What about, I want to know this. Between mm-hmm. you and your sister, who was your father's favorite?
My sister was as a young child, and my mother and I were always close. And then when my sister hit her teen years and became a hippie, my father virulently rejected her and what? Just put her down, and it really hurt her self-esteem. She never really recovered.
So how did you feel about that? How did you feel about your father virulently rejecting your sister? So now you have
well,
brother. Did he turn to you, or did you still not get him?
No. He had always kind of picked on me because I was very independent, and that annoyed him. She was very close with him and cooperative and sweet, and I was kind of, you know, independent and willful.
You know, so Lynn, you got the bad end of the stick with your dad, no matter what. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, first he favored your sister, and then even after
right.
your sister is gone, after she becomes a hippie, he still doesn't love you.
Right.
What attitude
right.
you must have towards men. I wouldn't blame you one bit. How do you get along with guys in general?
Well, you pretty well, and I have a lot of guy friends, but I've never been married, and I've always wanted to be. And I've dealt with this in therapy quite a bit, and I've learned a lot, and actually I recently did the Landmark Forum. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Very familiar with it, yeah.
I had such a breakthrough in finally being able to let go of what he did and forgive him. And it's been really freeing for me. That's really helped.
So it sounds like, I would say to you that we have the following situation here. You see, your sister, what's her name, by the way?
Wendy.
Wendy. Wendy has
mm-hmm.
had to fight you her whole life. She's had to
yeah.
fight you and your mother her whole life. So this
yep.
is more of the same from childhood, you see? It's not just a matter of Wendy with her sperm son, right? Where did she get him from?
Right.
From a sperm bank?
Yes.
The Siemens Bank. I know that
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
The, So Wendy has been fighting you and your mom your whole life. You and your mom have been, in effect, collaborating and saying, look at that one over there. Number one, because she got daddy. And number two, because she was so independent and so wild. So this is just more of the same. Now, Wendy sees you as being more antagonistic towards her and your mom as being antagonistic towards her just the way you've always been. And she, therefore, no matter what her behaviors are, she's going to isolate more and more with the son. I wish there were a way of you not just resolving with your father, but
right.
resolving with Wendy. You need,
yeah.
you got a second landmark coming. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You got a second,
yeah.
the one about you and her has to be, and this, if you want to save that kid's life, in many ways,
yeah.
if the kid is in danger, the first thing you've got to do is get related to Wendy and never mention her relationship to her son. You got to find
okay.
a way of making peace with her.
Okay.
And if you make peace with her and the war stops, then she will
okay.
be different. And the other thing, too, is if you make peace with your mother, with your sister, don't tell your mother about it. Don't ever give your mother any details. Never discuss your sister with your mother again. And tell Wendy you're going to do that.
Wow. That's powerful.
It is very powerful because you'll be saying to Wendy, you know, I've always talked, me and Mom always talk about you. I've made a deal with myself. From now on, I want a relationship with you, and I'm not going to tell Mom anything about you or anything that takes place between us. Would you do the same for me? She'll say, of course. And something great will happen between the two of you. That's step one. Step two, how much difference is there between you and Wendy in age?
About 3 years.
About 3 years. When you were a kid,
yeah,
when you
older,
were a kid,
yeah.
What game did you play together to keep each other busy? Did you jump rope?
I don't remember. I actually don't remember, to tell you the truth.
Did you jump rope? Did you have a game board? Did you have a? Did you go bowling? What did you do?
Probably cards, because we loved playing cards with my grandmother. So.
What kind of cards?
There was a game called Spite and Malice. So it was
Spite and Malice. You and your sister played Spite and Malice? Just, you know, I don't want to say anything about that. I'm going to pass that one by. Other than that, you know, other people play Go Fish. You like Spite and Malice. Good.
I know. The other game was Flinch. That was a special deck of cards. But, yeah, cards were pretty popular.
Flinch? How do you play Flinch?
It's a special deck of cards, and to be honest with you, I don't remember, but when my grandmother passed away, I kept the cards, so maybe she gave them to her son.
But you see, no, you stay away from her son. Stay away from her son, but bring the cards and say, Wendy, let's get together and play Flinch. I got the cards.
Wow.
Now imagine you and Wendy alone, nobody around. Get a babysitter for the son.
Mm-hmm.
You and Wendy going somewhere, playing Flinch, playing Spite and Malice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playing cards, doing whatever you do, you know, having a good time, drinking tea if you drink tea. Just one date where it's just the two of you. No reports to Mom, no reports to anything. Doing something you like to do together. Do you think Wendy would respond? You think she'd accept your invitation?
Definitely.
Boy, would would that be a healing, huh?
Yeah,
would
and you know, it's funny. He and my mom have always been openly antagonistic about this issue, but I've tended not to say anything, but I know she knows that I judge her, you know? So this is such a wonderful suggestion.
Go take care of it. Let me know. Call me in.
Thank
let
you
me,
so much.
Let me know, or write me an email and tell me how this goes.
Okay. I will. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Sure.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So you see, very often people are concerned about issues related to another person, and there we get the original issue. Hey, look at what she's doing with her son. But you see, even the judgment, even the attitude comes from a long history of spite and malice. Spite and malice? Hearts? Pinochle. Spite and Malice? I got to look that one up. We had one called Nux. Did any of you ever play? You ever play Nux? Oh, my God, that was brutal. You play and when you win, you hit the other person on the Nux with a deck of cards on the knuckles, you know? And when they win, they hit you on the arm with the knuckles. And it was like you walk away with bleeding knuckles. And this was the game. Hey, how are you? Good day today, you know? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi.
Are you still
Hi.
Talking about the mothers and the, you know, the wives and their husbands and
I
their
sure
relationship
am,
to the mother? Now I'm going to lower the radio and turn it off. Two things. I want to talk about my
relationship
with my ex-husband.
No, make it one thing, because I want you, because since I get you on every call, on every radio show, I want you to give me just a fast one, okay?
Okay, I'll give
you a
quickie.
So many people lined up, I want to do it fast.
Okay. I had a mother-in-law from hell. The Greeks are notorious. Their mothers are put on pedestals. And the wife, if you have a child, if the firstborn is a boy, you take third position. If you are a girl, if you have another child and it's a girl, or even if it's another boy, the wife takes fourth position. So the mother of the husband is queen bee. You see, she's priority. The son comes second. Sons are very important. I married into a family with
Leora,
six other
it's
brothers.
Actually done in time. You know that? I'm not going to get a chance to get another call in now that you've given me that history, although it's good to know about these priorities in the Greek family.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the wives are absolutely nothing. And depending on how many children you have, the more children you have, the lower you get on the ladder.
Yeah,
the wife gets on the ladder.
It sure does get messy when you're trying to find relationships, when you get these boys who get in these, you know, kingly positions.
Right.
I understand it. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for
so that's what I wanted to share with you.
Thank you.
By the way. By the way. Hello?
Yes, hi there.
It's called The Traditions of the Elders, and I'm in the process of sending you your own book.
Thank you.
Okay?
Okay, Leora. 212-209-2900. I'm sorry I'm short with Leora, but she happens to get in on every call, and I would really love to get a bunch of other callers in here as well. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Armand.
Yes.
Oh, how are you? I'm just listening to what that lady said, and I recall about a week, maybe a month ago, you said that the Japanese have a cultural thing where you come first, and then your mate, and then your children, and then the rest of your family.
That's right.
And and the way that she said that the Greek tradition has it is like opposite to that.
Almost opposite.
Right, if they looked at it the other way, maybe there'd be more coherence in the family. But also I called to say that I find the previous caller that said that her sister still sleeps with her son and that she thinks that that's a problem. I have a four-year-old son, and my wife and I, we have a big king-size bed, and we like to stay with him in bed so we can snuggle him and all. And we see it as that if there's one thing we know for sure is that this boy knows that he is so loved by his parents. And then, you know, she's from the Philippines, and in those other cultures where maybe there's more poverty, and maybe there isn't an extra room for the baby, so they have to all sleep in one bed out of necessity. And that sort of thing
brings about... So how do you get together with your wife when you have your child in the middle? I mean, how do you sleep with your wife? Do you hold her? How can
Well, she spoons the baby, and I spoon her.
She spoons the baby, and you spoon her. So really,
yeah,
the baby's not in the middle. The baby's at the end.
Yeah, that way he doesn't risk falling off the bed. He's closer to the wall, so he doesn't fall off.
And how do you have sex?
Well, we actually go off and we go into his room or on the living room couch or something. So, you know, we leave once he's asleep.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. Now, I've never heard, I understand what you're saying, and outside of need, you know, when there's poverty, I've never heard this thing that you're talking about work out well. I've never seen it work out well for the mentality of the child eventually. So, and that's just my prejudice. I mean, it's not even a prejudice. It's just my experience. The experience I've had always is, the one I've seen, is the child has to be given their own space and grow up in their own space. And even though it looks very much like love, and I'm sure it is, somehow the child is going to suffer from the separation. And what their attitude is going to be later in life towards what love is. You know, love is having a mommy and a daddy hold you all night, and love is not dealing with frustration. So I've never seen it, you know. So most clinicians and I would say, gee, I've never seen it work. Maybe it will in this case.
Isn't it the case that when the child gets older, then they want their privacy, then they don't want to hug mom anymore?
You're
going to
wait till they're 13 to let them get to that point? You're going to wait till
they're
13?
Well, I don't know if it's 13 or before that.
Yeah, not on their own.
No,
not on their own. Did you ever take a puppy to bed with you, and did you have your puppy sleep on your bed? When does the puppy ever say, I think I'm going to go sleep on the floor now? They don't do that.
Right, no, they don't.
Their bed is their bed. And then when you start putting them on the floor, they get depressed. So I don't know if it works. And I really don't say this from a place of judgment. It's just I haven't seen it work. And you might consider looking a little more into it. Like a little more into the research of what it's like to have that happen. And I'm not talking about the Philippines because I'm close to people in the Philippines as well. I'm talking about here with a child here. How does it work? You know, what does a child need?
Well, yeah, I just don't seem to think that it's as big of a problem as people tend to make it out to be. Like there are times that he's fallen asleep on the couch and we've left him there. And he's been fine. He didn't go up, he didn't wake up screaming for us. Yeah, I think people get paranoid, and there are situations, I guess, where you know parents can cross the line a little bit, like some of this mouth-to-mouth smooching or something. But you know, if there isn't any of that, and it's just out of like affection and closeness,
I understand everything you're saying, and you sound like such a loving dad. I trust your heart and your intention. Mm-hmm. I trust it completely. I'm only saying to you in my experience. Which doesn't necessarily mean it's valid. You're a loving man. You want to do the best for your son. You know, you want to do the best for him. As I said, I would take a second look at it, you know. If you would come in and if you'd come in with your wife and said, you know, it is really the best for my son, I'd say, well, let's experiment with it. Let's try a couple of things. What? How old is your son now?
Four.
What happens when your son sleeps away?
Oh, sometimes he stays over at my mom's if we're both working or something, like the next morning. Over there, he sleeps with my mom also, actually.
I was afraid of that. Yeah. I was afraid that's what it was going to become, yeah. Yeah,
and then my dad sleeps in the extra room. My dad sleeps in the extra room and he sleeps with her.
I hear. But how do you feel about sleeping with your mom?
There's no problem with it. See, my mom's wonderful. She's the only other person that I allow to take care of him. I don't have any babysitters. I wouldn't let even a friend or a relative. Just my mother, because I can trust her like 110%.
Remember the thing I said about the child at one point feels like they have to close their mind off to protect themselves about the invasion of the people protecting them? Those are the things that I see happening in this kind of a situation. As I said, sounds like a real loving family with the best of intentions. But, you know, it's worth looking closely at. Hey, listen, I've got to go. And I thank you very much for calling in and braving telling me what the story is. And I wish I could just say to you, yeah, you're right. You know, with my limited experiences in life. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you, Armand.
Sure. Hey, this is Armand DeMille. If you wanted a copy of today's show, you would call 1-800-575-0580, 1-800-575-0580. I'll be back with you on Thursday with more on this issue and maybe a surprise guest. Bye-bye, friends.